Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Do you hurt the people you love but don't want to? You may be doing emotionally abusive behavior and not even realize it. If you want to stop hurting those you care about, head over to healedbeing.com and join the program that many people are calling a life changer.
Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now.
Hello, welcome to the show. My name is Paul Coliani, and I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, handle toxic situations with grace and ease, and give you the tools to show up as your authentic self. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. I had somebody reach out to me and ask, what are good coping mechanisms? She's in a relationship and she fears abandonment. And she said, you know, you've had experience here. What did you do? What are your coping mechanisms? And I had to think, because one of the things that happens when you heal from old dysfunctions or maybe toxic behavior or any behavior that makes you feel bad, really. I mean, these are behaviors that you carry with you from childhood that you do when you're an adult, and they don't work anymore. They worked in childhood because you had to survive. You had to feel like you were going to make it through, because as a child, you don't know what is going to hurt you or not. And you have a good guess what it might be, especially if you've gotten hurt before, but you just want to avoid it. So what ends up happening is, as a child, you create all these trauma response mechanisms, I guess you could say, which are basically your coping mechanisms that you grow up with, and they don't work anymore. A lot of them don't work. So if you were the people pleaser when you were a child because you didn't want to incite bad behavior from an aggressive person, if you take that into the adult world, people get annoyed. People will find you difficult to be around, even though you're the nicest person on the planet. I know it's strange. If you've not heard this concept before, if you've not heard me talk about it, people-pleasing is an annoying dysfunction to a lot of people, that aren't people-pleasers, I should say. And I say that with love and respect if you are in this space, because that was me. That was me for a good, 30-plus years of my life. It was exactly what I did. I would say yes when I meant no. I would accommodate when people didn't want my accommodation. I would anticipate people's decisions or actions and try to do what they wanted for them. So I would always show up in a way that I believed would make them feel good and in turn, at a deeper level, make them like me or keep them liking me or keep them loving me or caring about my presence in their life. I just wanted to show up in a way that was super accommodating, super adaptable to whatever they were going through. So even if they were angry, I could adapt to that. Or if they wanted me to be someone I wasn't, I would be that person. I would turn into that person. The chameleon changes colors. I would adapt. So if you can relate to any of that, you know what I mean. And I know what you mean. I know what you are going through and what you do. The problem, as I've spoken about before, is that when you're a people pleaser, you get burnt out or burned out. You get totally toasted. You get fried because everyone that you're pleasing, it's never enough, if at all, reciprocation. You don't receive what you give. It's not a good ROI, return on investment. So you give, and you give. And then if somebody else gives back, it feels pretty good, but it's never enough. And the people that give back may not give back when you want them to. And what the people pleaser will end up doing is continuing to give, hoping to have something returned to them, a return on their investment. So when that doesn't happen, the people pleaser tries harder. And the person who wrote to me, which I'll read their email in the next segment, had a question about coping mechanisms, because if they've been accommodating or even enabling of bad behavior, which I think that's what she means, then what ends up happening is you forego your own needs and you become, extra compassionate, meaning outside of you, like extraterrestrial. It's outside of our terrestrial space. So we go into extra compassionate. And that actually, the double meaning works because you're usually more compassionate to other people than yourself. You're usually in a space of giving and giving and being compassionate toward people who really may not need it. Of course, everyone needs compassion, or at least most people. They would prefer compassion. But the overly compassionate, the extra compassionate behaviors will certainly work against you and be a part of your emotional deficit. It really drains you. This is all part of the burnout. And for me, it's always been a 4-year burnout. I will have a friend that I overly accommodate and I'm overly compassionate about, and in about 4 years, I'm sick of doing it. I don't think that way, or at least I used to not think that way. I would just get upset that there wasn't enough reciprocation, or I would feel like not talking to them on the phone, because I know if I talk to them on the phone, I'm going to have to put on the fake smile. I'm going to have to be someone I don't want to be. If I'm not happy, I don't want to be unhappy on the phone, because I don't want them to think that I'm that type of person. Again, if you resonate, you understand, and I resonate with you if you understand. I get this. And so the reason I'm talking about this is because I do think it's important to develop healthier coping mechanisms and start thinking about your boundaries. With a people pleaser, they don't really have good boundaries, if any. I mean, there might be, if you get poked on the head 100 times, you're going to stop the person poking you on the head, but that isn't necessarily the day-to-day thing. The day-to-day thing is the person who does what they don't want often enough until it builds up, and then they don't want to do anything after that. They don't want to accommodate anymore. And they'll often get passive-aggressive if they're not already. And they will often get angry for no reason, or at least seemingly no reason. That's because of the built-up resentment they have, that as time goes on and they're not being reciprocated, that resentment builds up. And we can go through this even if we're not a people pleaser. You can go through this no matter who you are, no matter what you do, a resentment can build up because you're just nice to someone and they aren't. They aren't nice back. Or you're accommodating to someone, or you've done someone a favor and they don't want anything to do with you, or they say bad things about you, they gossip about you. And you're trying hard, and it doesn't work. And I've learned that some people just don't like you. Maybe not you, but me. I've learned that some people just don't like me. They don't like my personality. They don't like the way I show up. They don't like what I have to say. Fortunately, the people that don't like me, I don't hear from too often. But when I do, it's pretty pointed. It's pretty direct. It's pretty critical. And then I realize, wait, how many people like me versus how many people don't like me? So if I'm going to measure my level of worth looking through other people's eyes, which I don't believe you should do, but this is what we do anyway, then I have to remember that 1,000 eyes over here love me, and this one pair of eyes over here doesn't or hates me. And because of that, they have their own issues with me, and that's fine. But I'm not here to serve them. I'm not here to be their friend. I'm here to serve the people that love me. I'm here to be a friend to the people that love me. So that's important too. And that's one of my coping mechanisms. We're talking about coping mechanisms. That's one of them, is that you focus on the people that care about you, and you just, you know, try not to focus on the people that don't. And it's hard. I say that with hesitation because I know it's hard. It's hard not to focus on someone who says something bad about you or doesn't care about you. And so what's your coping mechanism there? What do you do? Well, Paul, I just get angry and I stew about it for 3 weeks. That could be you. That could be me. That could be something I do. And whenever that happens, whenever you have a bad feeling about what someone says about you or what someone does to you, and you take it personally, there's always a hit, or most of the time there's a hit on your ego, on your self-worth, on your self-esteem. And you have to remind yourself of all the good stuff. You have to remind yourself of the good people in your life. And if you have very few, it might be time to get more good people in your life and stop hanging around the people that aren't so good. And if they are people that do bad behavior and they don't like you or they want you to feel bad, probably not a good idea to have them as your source of self-esteem and self-worth, because they're not going to give you what you need. So back to coping mechanisms. I think it's important to understand, or at least look into your past and ask yourself, when this happened to me, I did blank. So when Mom yelled at me, I did blank. Or what did I do? You can answer that question. When Dad hit me, I did blank. That could be a deep question. I don't know what I did. I guess I cried. Okay, but how did you feel about that? Well, I felt like I wasn't worth anything. Okay, there's a worth statement. Are you feeling less worth through the eyes of your father or whoever hurt you in some way? And because you felt that, what did you do about it? Well, there was nothing I could do. That might be your answer. Maybe there was nothing you could do. Well, I just hid in my room. I think I just talked about this recently, probably in the last episode, but it's very prevalent to what the message is today, this email. So yes, I hid in my room, and I didn't come out until I felt better or until Dad went to sleep or whatever, and then I came out and everything was fine. So that might be a coping mechanism that you took into your adult world. And that could be your version of silent treatment for processing time. It's just something that you did as a kid. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing necessarily. It's just something that you need to be aware of. Because once you're aware of how you coped, you can choose to do something differently. So I'm not necessarily going to go over coping mechanisms today, because I do think I just talked about this. It might have been in the last episode. But I do want to help by giving you some questions to ask yourself. I love asking myself questions, especially ones that go deep. I want questions to go deep. I want them very specific. I want specific questions. I don't want questions where somebody comes up and says, "How do you feel?" That's a great start. I'm not saying there's a problem with that question. I ask it all the time. But I don't want only that question. How do you feel? Why do you feel that way? What's going on with you? Those are basic questions, and they're good door-opening questions. I don't have a problem with them. But I want someone to ask me something deeper that really connects inside to help me reveal some unhealthy stuff inside of me or some painful stuff that I want to get out or process and heal. And once that is processed and healed, then it doesn't affect me anymore, and I don't do those old coping mechanisms anymore. Because one of the reasons we have old coping mechanisms that we've done in the past is that we haven't gotten over or past some old trauma that has happened, or neglect, or problems that we haven't learned how to deal with, haven't coped with correctly or in a healthy way. So in order to get past this stuff and develop new coping mechanisms, there's a layer underneath that. And that layer is the cause why we jump into this coping mechanism. People pleasing, for example. Why do I people please? It's because I want to feel loved. Why do I want to feel loved? Now we're getting a little deeper. Why do I want to feel loved? The first response I usually get with that type of question is, why wouldn't I want to feel loved? That wasn't my question. I don't want to have you answer that question. I want you to answer the question, why do you want to feel loved? That's a stupid question. I love stupid questions. Great. I'm glad you think it's a stupid question. If it's so stupid, go ahead and answer it. Well, I'm exaggerating. I know I am. And I do it because I do want to maybe interrupt the process of accessing these deeper emotions with a little laughter. There's nothing wrong with a little laughter as you go through this process. Okay, that's a stupid question. Well, if it's such a stupid question, it should be very easy to answer. So go ahead. Yeah, well, I want to be loved. Everyone wants to be loved, but why do I want to be loved? I want to be loved so I feel like I'm part of something bigger, so I feel like I'm cared about. Yeah, but what does that do for you? There's another question. What does that do for you? Well, if I'm cared about, which is the same thing as being loved, I guess, or at least on the same path, what does that do for me if I'm loved and cared about? You know, kind of going through this in real time. If I feel cared about, then I don't feel so alone. Ah, there, I answered Paul's question. I went deeper. I don't feel so alone. Well, knowing me, I'm going to ask the next deeper question. I'm going to say, well, what's so bad about being alone? Ah, gee, nobody wants to be alone. I know. It's another stupid question, but let's go there anyway. What's so bad about being alone? I don't want to be alone. Yeah, that's probably true. A lot of us don't want to be alone, and some of us do. But why don't you want to be alone? Well, if I'm alone, I'll feel sad. And I know you're going to ask, why will you feel sad? I feel sad because I'll feel like nobody loves me. I'll feel like maybe I'm not worthy of being loved. That's a little bit deeper, isn't it? I'm getting into those deeper layers, these peeling back these layers that are underneath the stuff that we say to ourselves and about ourselves. I don't want to be sad. I don't want to be alone. I don't want to be lonely. What's so bad about being lonely? Well, nobody wants to feel that again. That's a sad place again. You know, I don't like that feeling. Okay, you don't like that feeling. Why not? Well, I'm really pushing. I'm pushing deeper and deeper underneath all these layers that hold back what we really feel inside. They are repressing this stuff at the deepest level. This is the kind of stuff I love. Believe it or not, I love digging in so deep that I just feel ridiculous for asking the question. I just like, why would I ask that question? I mean, you know, if I'm doing it to myself. Why would I ask that question? Why don't you want to be lonely? That's a dumb question. At the same time, it's a great question. Why don't you want to be lonely? Well, it's such a sad place. Why is it sad? Why are you asking me these questions? Okay, we might be rubbing you the wrong way. Might be triggering something in you. But I think it's important to know the reason you don't want to feel something, even if it's a bad thing. Why don't you want to feel this bad thing? I don't want to feel this bad thing because this is where the gold is. I mean, you are so many inches, just a few inches from gold. That's going to help you reveal why you do the coping mechanism. And it's interesting, you'll find, is that some of our coping mechanisms conflict with our deepest fears or our deepest worries or concerns. These coping mechanisms that we have can conflict in a way. For example, I'm afraid of being alone. That could be not the deepest layer, but a very deep worry inside of you, yet your coping mechanism might be to be alone, to be silent, to process. It might be going to a room by yourself so that you can be alone. Yet the reason you're doing that is because you don't want to be alone. That could be helpful. If you have this coping mechanism that you don't want to be alone, that could be helpful. If you have a fear of being alone, but you cope by being alone, it reveals something to you. It helps you understand maybe some behaviors and maybe some coping mechanisms don't work. Now, the caveat to that is, let's just say you're in a relationship and you need to be away from the person hurting you. And doing this requires you to be alone because maybe there's no one else to talk to where you live, or you're not going to make a phone call because you need to process. Yes, absolutely. But this isn't the answer show. This is the question show. This is the episode that I help you dive in just deeper and deeper into your psyche, into the emotional pool inside of you that helps you connect with some of the repressed emotions, some of the stuff that maybe you have never visited or don't visit often enough. And once you visit it, once you connect with it, it can help you get past some of the stuff that causes you to cope in a way that's not exactly functional. If you're doing things that aren't functional, that don't help you progress, that don't help you heal, and keep you in a state that isn't really productive in your life, for example, staying in a bad relationship for years and years and years, knowing it's bad for you, yet you stay in it, and you've tried everything, and you've communicated, and you've been to therapy or whatever, then it's important that you take the next step. And that next step might be leaving or not, but if you have contemplated it and you haven't done it yet, then there might be a coping mechanism preventing you from taking the step. And that coping mechanism may have its roots in what you used to do as a kid. Well, I can't leave home. I can't run away because I'm too small. So I can't leave home as an adult either. And that might work against you, as you can understand. That might work against you. So that's why I think it's important to understand how you cope, how you deal with challenges, and to dive in or drill in to what you're holding on to at the deepest level inside of you. really dive in there, it's sort of like, I don't know if you've ever been to a hypnotist or watched it on TV, but often what some hypnotists will do is take you deeper and deeper into your subconscious mind. They will take you down the stairs, and as you go down the stairs, you go deeper and deeper and more relaxed. Now, I don't want you to do that, because hearing my voice, you may actually start to do that, so I'm going to bring you back up the stairs so you can stay aware. But at the same time, I do want you to listen subconsciously as well as consciously. I do want your subconscious mind to pick up what it needs to pick up and learn what it needs to learn, so that as you listen to me consciously, this other stuff can go in and help you out unconsciously or subconsciously, so that you will feel differently after listening to something like this. And the only reason I said that is because I really want this deep stuff to not hold you back. I want you to feel free to make decisions that are right for you, to honor yourself, to honor your boundaries, to make sure that you are doing things not from a place of fear, but from a place of wanting things for yourself and knowing what's healthy for you and following that path, and also knowing what's unhealthy or toxic or dangerous to you. Because if it's toxic or dangerous and you're still in a situation that exposes you to that, it's very hard to move forward. It's very hard to get past that point, because you are just limited inside. And limited could be, your limitation could be a subconscious thing. You don't know why you do the stuff you do, which is why we ask the deeper questions. When we come back, I'm going to read this email and see what kind of deep questions we can have this person ask herself. And of course, you can ask yourself these questions as well. We'll be right back after this. Well, there's one thing that I have not had very good luck with. It's sleep. Sleep at night, at least growing up, and never being able to fall asleep easily. In fact, I've had so many nights where I was staring at, like when I was younger, I was staring at my Game Boy. I was trying to play a game to fall asleep. And then they tell me, don't stare at electronics, just close your eyes and, you know, dim the lights and make sure you do all this stuff to calm your nervous system down before bed. And okay, so I tried that, and I still laid there with my eyes shut waiting to fall asleep. And so I did that for many, many years, and I just got used to it. But those days of self-sacrifice are over. This year, I'm going to prioritize me. I'm going to prioritize myself with Beams premium products for sleep. And I think you should too. I think you should prioritize you first with their products, because they help you sleep. And I say this feeling pretty darn good getting a good night's sleep now, because I have a nice cup of hot cocoa at night, and this hot cocoa contains CBD, and I've never had CBD before this, and now I wish this was around most of my life so that I wouldn't have to lay there with my eyes shut waiting to sleep. For those that don't know, Beam is a functional wellness brand that makes products for sleep. They help you get calm and focused and give you some energy, and they come in the form of, at least the stuff I'm using, cocoa, like their new white chocolate peppermint dream that is very limited during the Christmas season. So I highly recommend you head over to beamorganics.com/brain. And when you go there, you're going to get $20 off any purchase of $75. And what that means is you're getting 30 servings of a high-quality, triple lab-tested, delicious drink with sleep-promoting ingredients such as nano-hemp, reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, and melatonin. And I am looking forward to my own white chocolate peppermint dream, because I love white chocolate. I've always loved white chocolate, and that sounds like something I want on a cold night right before I go to sleep. It takes me about 20 minutes. After I have one of these Beam Dream Cocos, it takes me about 20 minutes before I start getting that feeling that I probably should be in bed by now. Definitely not operating heavy machinery. So check it out. Go to beamorganics.com/brain. And when you go there, use the checkout code BRAIN so that you get the $20 off any purchase of $75 or more. And this offer includes one-time purchases and subscriptions. Yes, they have a subscription. And you got to try this. You got to try it at least once to understand what I'm talking about. It has changed my nights. It has changed my nocturnal activities to sleep instead of waiting for sleep. BeamOrganics.com. That's B-E-A-M Organics.com/brain. And something else I wish was around about 20 years ago when I needed it most, but I'm so glad they're here now, is BetterHelp. BetterHelp is also a sponsor of this show. They are a customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and live chat sessions with a therapist. And I could have used this many years ago because I really didn't want to be face-to-face with a human being. I'm an introvert. I don't mind being face-to-face with human beings, don't get me wrong, but when it comes to talking about my stuff, those skeletons in my closet, I don't necessarily feel comfortable talking to just anyone about it. I have to get to know them a little bit, but I have noticed that the barrier of the screen or even the phone can be a huge, huge help when it comes to sharing your personal stuff with someone. And you know, if you have any stigma about therapy, this is the way to go. And even if you don't, this is the way to go because they have a broad selection of experts that specialize in areas such as depression, relationships, family conflicts, grief, self-esteem. They can deal with anger issues, trauma and anxiety, whatever you're going through, BetterHelp is there. And if you're looking for any type of emotional or mental or psychological help or guidance, check them out. Go to betterhelp.com/brain. That's two words, BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/brain. And if you go to that link, you'll get 10% off your first month. And they're going to help you unload the stressors and give you that unbiased feedback you need. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/brain. Welcome back. Like I said, I'm going to read you this message and hopefully we have some questions that you can answer or the person who wrote can answer to help you get into a better space inside your head, because you can ask other people questions about how to help you through a situation, but you probably have the answer at a deeper level, but don't know how to access it or don't know what to ask yourself. So I'm going to see if I can come up with a few questions for this person who wrote, and maybe you can apply these questions to your own life as well. But let me go ahead and read this and find out where we go with it. This person wrote, I need help with coping mechanisms with the idea of leaving. I was diagnosed with BPD, bipolar disorder, and I was undiagnosed during my relationship that is about to end, and I can feel my symptoms coming back with the thought of abandonment. I just wanted to let you know that I am very aware that I am the accommodator. I just don't know how to deal with those feelings of not conforming to control and manipulation, which is actually ripping us apart because now it's all my fault when I stick up for myself. The whole situation just feels mentally unsafe. I'm starting to feel insane. I love our family and I love my partner, but I cannot have a house or a car with him. I just feel used up and discarded. It's very hurtful and powerless where I am, and I don't know what to do. What are some healthy coping mechanisms? What will make me feel safe? I was always enabling drug use, but as of recently, I don't allow it because of the kids, and it started happening in front of them, so I felt that wasn't safe, so he left. How do I tell myself that I'm safe and I'm going to be okay when he's taken all of my friends and support away? How do you express yourself when you feel like an iron is in your brain? This is from BPD, she says. I know this is very heavy. My regular therapist is on vacation. Listening to your podcast, I just feel like you would know where I'm coming from and not think I'm crazy. If you have time, please let me know your thoughts. Okay, thank you for sharing that. First of all, this is a safe place to share. I think one coping mechanism is writing, and part of that is writing to someone you feel safe with, even if they're imaginary, even if they've passed on. Hey, so-and-so, I wanted to let you know this is what I'm going through. That is one coping mechanism. I know this is supposed to be the question show, but I'm giving you a minor answer that might help you in a major way. But I do believe that when you write this stuff out, it helps release the emotions that are stored or repressed inside of you. It's sort of like when I wrote my soon-to-be ex-wife when I was getting a divorce, I wrote her all the emotions I was feeling and the anger and the frustration and the irritation. And I just wrote it all out ready to click send on an email. And then I read it again. And as I read it, I realized I didn't feel the same way. Like, I still felt some of what I wrote. I still felt that. But reading through it, I thought, well, in this moment, after I wrote those things out, to her to make her feel bad or to make my anger known or whatever it was, I didn't feel that way anymore. It was like as I wrote it out, I was feeling it and I was emoting it on paper or the computer screen. And as it was coming out, it really came out. It decreased the amount of intensity inside of me. It just lost a lot of its power. So I went through and I rewrote it. And as I was writing it out again, I had some frustrations and some anger, and I just wrote out what I was feeling and what I was thinking, but it wasn't as intense as before. So I wrote that out, and then I'm thinking, okay, this is the one I'm going to send. I'm still getting everything I want to say on paper or computer screen, like I said, and when I do this, it's going to send her the message loud and clear. And I will feel, I don't know, vindicated. I'll feel better. I'll feel like I've gotten the last word or something. And I reread it, and I thought to myself, I just don't feel that way now. I felt that way a few minutes ago when I wrote it, but I don't feel that way now. Okay, so I had to think about this. What's happening? I'm writing this stuff out, and I feel less angry. I feel less frustrated. I feel a little bit better. Like I got it out and now I feel a little bit better. Maybe I should rewrite it again. And that's what I did. And I ended up doing this only 3 times, but I could have done it again. But really on the 3rd time, I noticed the anger was gone and all the hurtful comments that I was going to say to her were gone. And I felt so different at that point. I felt relieved. I felt a release. It was the pressure that was not there anymore. And what replaced that pressure was a good feeling, or I shouldn't say good, but more neutral. I didn't feel all the negativity I felt before. So my 3rd email, my 3rd message to her basically said, you know, I take responsibility for everything I did in the relationship and I'm sorry. And I want you to be happy. I want you to have a good life. Maybe we'll meet again in the future as 2 different people and things will be different, or maybe not. But either way, I just want you to be happy. I want you to have a good life. And I looked at that and I felt really good about that one. I think it was because I finally took responsibility for my feelings, for my emotions, and I didn't put them on anyone else. And so I clicked send. And that was it. And I didn't expect a response. I didn't want a response necessarily. I just wanted to get it out. And I did get it out on the 1st 2 iterations. And I got out what I needed to get on the 3rd iteration. And I felt really good about it. You ever send something to someone and feel like, oh, crap, this is gonna light someone's fire. This is going to make them angry. Or this is going to cause a stir. And I don't want to cause a stir. But I have to say it. So you send a text or the email, or you tell them on the phone, or you tell them in person. You know it's not going to go well when you say it. So you think about this stuff ahead of time, and you think, maybe I shouldn't say that because it's not going to go well, but I want to say it, or I need to say it. This is how I felt. I was like, I wanted to say this stuff. And then when I said it on, quote, paper, I wrote it out, I typed it out, and suddenly that feeling was gone. So that was a long explanation to a minor suggestion that writing this stuff out can help relieve the pressure. And of course, talking about it to your best friend, to a therapist, to someone that you trust can also help relieve it. But you do have to get to those layers underneath that hold more truth. They hold deeper truths. And so this person is asking, what's a good coping mechanism? I want to leave, but I don't feel safe. And what she's saying is that she, at least later on in the email, I have a fear of abandonment. So this is where we start our questioning. Why do you have a fear of abandonment? We'll start off with a very, very basic question. That's a good question to answer. If you have a fear, a worry, a concern, just ask yourself, well, why do I have that? And you're not allowed to answer, anyone would have that fear. And you're not allowed to answer, I don't know. So if I ask a question and you are playing along, you can't say, I don't know. I mean, you can. I'm not going to stop you. And I don't know is actually a good answer as long as it doesn't stop there. But if you say, I don't know, you do have to go a little further. Meaning, if you say, I don't know, then you say, well, why do you think? That might be another way to ask it. Why do you think you have a fear of abandonment? That might be a way to ask it. But you can't stop it. Like I said, I don't know. And you can't say, well, anyone would have that fear. And this may not be an appropriate question for that. But there are times when somebody say, well, why do you fear getting bitten by a snake? You can't say, well, anyone would fear getting bitten by a snake. Because if you say that, you're bypassing your fear. You're almost in denial about your fear. And what that means is if you ever generalize a fear or a worry or a concern, anything like that inside of you, if you ever generalize it, you end up missing out on the opportunity to heal from it or move past it, you know, go beyond it. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be afraid of, for example, dangerous snakes, poisonous snakes. That might be a generalized fear that if you wanted to, you could get over. Like if you work in the garden all the time and you see snakes and you have to run into the house and you can't come out for a week, that might affect your gardening. So you want to address these fears if they are affecting your life. If they're not, you know, I don't care. I don't care if you address those fears as long as they're not affecting your life. And if it's affecting your family, it might be something you want to address. It's up to you. But that's the starting question, is why do you fear that? And then let's just say you came up with an answer. I fear abandonment because, and like I said in the last segment, I don't want to be alone. What's the next question? I bet you can figure out the next question. I'm giving you an opportunity. Where I go is, why don't you want to be alone? If you predicted that was the question, 10 points. Why don't you want to be alone? Let's just say that was the answer. Well, I don't want to be alone because, you know, there's going to be a reason. And then you're going to keep drilling into, I call this drilling down, but you're going to drill down or drill into the answers that you give. I don't want to be alone because I want to be loved. I want to be in a relationship. Why do you want to be in a relationship? Well, if I'm in a relationship, then I'll be happy. Okay, now you have an answer that you really can't say, why do you want to be happy? I suppose you could. You could ask, why do you want to be happy? You could. That's actually not a bad question. Why do you want to be happy? But where I was going to go with it is, what about a relationship makes you happy? That could be a long list. But it's important to know why something works and why something doesn't work. How about what about a relationship makes you unhappy? That might be a longer list. It might be a very long list, or maybe not. But I'm asking first the why questions, helping you get to the reasons. And when you've dug into all the reasons, I like to ask the what questions or the what about questions. What about a relationship makes you happy? Well, you know, we share experiences together. Okay, that's a good one. Let's start there. What about sharing experiences together makes you happy? Well, when I'm with the other person, I feel like I'm sharing a part of me, and that makes me feel like I'm not alone. Oh, okay, so now we have the word alone again. So this is another way to phrase a question to yourself. Is being alone a problem for you? You can have many questions like this. Is being X a problem? Or how is X a problem for you? How is being alone a problem for you? I like to ask, is X a problem first? Because if you don't know it's a problem yet, if you're doing this with yourself, it's important to know if it is a problem. Hey, Paul, is a snake biting you a problem? Well, I would be afraid of it, and I would definitely be afraid if it was venomous. But I guess if it was just a regular, I don't know, garden snake and it bit me, I think it would be frightening. Like my fight or flight would kick in and I would try to get it off me, or I'd just throw it across the field. But is it a problem? I guess it's a problem in the sense that it would be painful and inconvenient. But when I think about it emotionally, I guess it's not. I mean, it's not something I walk around in fear about. Okay, so maybe snake bites aren't a big problem for you. And I'm just going through examples. Okay, is being alone a problem for you? And I would have a different answer than you. Because if being alone is a problem, how is that a problem? How is being alone a problem? So you've answered the first question, is being X a problem? If it's yes, then how is being X a problem? Okay, so now you have an answer. It's a problem because being alone makes me feel unwanted. You gotta listen for these words, unwanted. That's a huge word. How about unloved? How about unworthy? If any of those words came up, this is where we're getting into those layers that are underneath. I mean, the first answer wasn't, well, I don't want to be unworthy or unloved. I don't want to feel that. We didn't answer that the first time because the questions we were asking, if you knew that already, we wouldn't have to ask these questions. If you knew what was way underneath, and there's likely a lot more under this, but if you knew what was way underneath, you wouldn't have to ask yourself questions because you would know what to work on. And that doesn't mean you'd know how to work on it. That's definitely a different step in a different direction. But I believe it's important to connect with what's going on at the deepest layer there is. You got to get to the deepest part and connect with that so that when it is revealed, when you connect with it, you have an opportunity to process it not only at the conscious level, but like I said in the last segment, at the subconscious level. Because there are things that can be processed behind the scenes. And if that sounds a little hokey or a little weird, my training in hypnosis and my working with the subconscious mind for many years can tell you it's science. It is exactly how our brain works. If you've ever gone to sleep with a problem in your mind and you woke up with the solution, you know what I mean. And if you haven't done that, there are many things that you do unconsciously that you couldn't do consciously. Just like now, I couldn't do this consciously. If I had to consciously think about what I was going to say next, I wouldn't have this show. This wouldn't be something that I could do. So one day when I was creating this podcast, I went from scripting my episodes way back in 2013, 2014. I went from scripting my episodes to throwing away the script and finding out what the heck was in there. I wanted to find out what I knew and if I knew this stuff so well that I didn't need to follow a script. And it turns out ever since then I've been able to do it unconsciously. So I think it's important to trust that your unconscious mind will process this stuff and give you direction and even solutions that your conscious mind has to do something with. Because when it comes to a solution, sometimes you don't want to go in the direction of the solution. Sometimes you don't want to take that action. And that will stop you. That will prevent you from getting anywhere. Because somebody can come along and say, hey, you, I've got the answer to your problem. It's right here. This is exactly what you need to do. And if you do it, your life will be better. Imagine if somebody said that. If you do this, this is the solution to your problem. It will work, guaranteed, 100%. If you do it, your life will be better. You know, whatever problem you're dealing with will be overcome. But you have to do it. This is where the fears kick in, right? This is where our fear of the consequences kicks in. Well, if I do that, what's going to happen? There's some more questions. What's going to happen? What would happen if that happened? What about that am I worried about? What would happen if that happened and I experienced the worst case scenario? What's worse than that? And what's worse than that? It keeps going deeper and deeper. Take yourself there. Take yourself there. Take yourself to the deepest layer by asking yourself questions until you don't know what else to ask. But go even further. So back to, for example, the abandonment thing. Okay, now I'm feeling unwanted. I'm feeling unloved. I'm feeling insignificant. How are those things a problem? How is it a problem to feel unloved? I don't want to feel unloved. That's just awful. It feels sad. I don't want to be in that space. Why not? There's another question you can ask yourself. Why not? What? Why not? I want to be loved. Why? Another question. Why? I was told never to ask why questions because why questions always bring up a story. But I've learned that why questions, especially when you ask yourself or when you're walking somebody through this, why questions are beautiful because they give you so much data that helps you connect with the deeper layer stuff. And then you can work with your reasons. And you can ask yourself, here's another question, is that true? Is that really true? Well, I'll be alone. And if I'm alone, I'll be unhappy. Is that true? Well, yeah, because I've been alone before and I felt unhappy, Paul. I felt unhappy. So I know that being alone makes me unhappy. So where do you go with that? Well, what's wrong with being unhappy? Oh my God, I'm asking these questions and I can feel it in myself as I ask these questions. I can feel myself opening up even deeper layers of fear or concern or worry. I mean, I've worked through this stuff. I've healed through a lot of this stuff. But even just telling you now, I can feel my psyche opening up and pulling some old stuff out. And this is what it's all about, is getting to the deepest layers inside yourself, almost to the point where you are getting to the origin of when these fears, worries, or concerns were created. Imagine that. You found out when it was created, or you found the event it was created, like when I was six, so-and-so did this to me, and ever since then, I've been afraid to be alone. That's a wonderful discovery. If you find that, and especially if you have some sort of tearful breakdown, if you find an event that happened in your past that was the origin for how you don't want to feel today, and you have some sort of cry about it, or you scream about it, or you have some sort of, and I hate to say breakdown, I don't want you to have a breakdown, but if you have some sort of release in that moment, that might be the release you need to help you today. I'm thinking about a time when I was a child when it happened, and when I remember that incident, or what I can remember of that incident, I suddenly feel differently because that's who I was back then. That's not who I want to be today, but making this connection to back then makes me realize that there's so many ways to look at this that are so different than back then, because I had no power back then. I didn't have any power. And today I have more power. Some people may not feel that way. Some people may feel they have less power. If you don't feel like you have power, there are steps you have to take. And these are the scary steps. This is when your subconscious mind gives you some information and says, this is probably what you need to do, so do it. Or even better, this is exactly what you need to do, so do it. And then you're afraid to take that step into the unknown, the fear of the consequences. And remember my question, if you've never heard this before, if you had absolutely no fear of the consequences, what would you do then? Or what would you do or say then? If you had absolutely no fear of the consequences, because that is your truth. When you get that answer from your subconscious mind, because it's going to come up from the depths, that is the truth that if you act upon it, your life gets better. Your life changes. And I'm not saying that it always happens. Of course, don't write to me and say, well, there's always exceptions. I know that. There are always exceptions. I wouldn't want you to do this with violent, aggressive, or dangerous people. Sometimes you do it with a forward energy, an outgoing energy, and sometimes you do it with an internal, ingoing energy. And I'll break that down in as few seconds as possible. The forward outgoing energy is an offensive posture to keep some danger or toxicity away. It is telling someone, hey, stop treating me like that. I don't want your disrespect and I don't deserve it, and you better treat me better. That is an outgoing forward energy to someone else. The incoming or in, what did I say, ingoing? The incoming energy, the internal energy, is a defensive posture. It's self-protection. And sometimes you choose an outgoing stance, an outward stance, or an inward stance. And your inward stance is going to be self-protection, because sometimes you need to do that. And sometimes you have to do things while being internal. And what I mean by that is sometimes you have to leave a bad situation in self-protection mode. And sometimes you have to leave a bad situation putting your hand up at someone and saying, no, no more, I'm done. I'm done. And you walk away. You just have to make that determination, make the call, and keep yourself safe. So to finish off this email, I'm not giving this person any answers. I'm just helping her ask the right questions of herself so that she knows what to ask herself to get to that point she needs to get to in order to do the right thing for herself. Now, she mentioned bipolar disorder. You know, I don't have the qualifications to give you direction with that, all right? I can't guide you through that. I do know that there are medications for that. If you've got your bipolar disorder in order, if you're trying to balance that out, it can be helpful because that can be a separate thing. But I can't tell you what to do with that. I just know that it is more difficult with bipolar disorder because you're going to have one extreme or the other, and you just have to be really careful because when you're in one extreme, some manic space of some sort, you may not make much sense, and other people around you will ask you, are you on your medication? So I understand it's a very difficult thing to work with. But aside from that, there are many, many times when you think clearly. And because of that, that's the time when you can access these questions. It's hard for me to tell you don't do this when you're in any type of manic state or anything like that. Do it when you're thinking the most clearly. It's hard to say that because when you're not thinking clearly, you might end up going down a road that is not necessarily healthy for you, and you think it's healthy for you. So you just have to be careful with that and work on regulating that if you can. When it comes to coping mechanisms, what this person asked, I think it's important to ask yourself this question. What would happen if I couldn't cope with this? Just ask that. What would happen if I couldn't cope with this? Because this is another way to dive into what's underneath the inability to cope in a healthy way. Some people are going to say, if I can't cope with it, I'll be in, I don't know, pain. I'll suffer. How will you suffer? I don't even want to go there. I know, but how will you suffer? And this is where you start diving in to your fears and concerns and worries, because you need to know how you'll suffer. And I believe it's important to do the worst case scenario exercise that I talk about in another episode. What you do is imagine the worst thing happening. Okay, if I can't cope, this will happen. What is this? Okay, if I can't cope, this thing will happen. okay, what's worse than that? That would be my next question. Well, what's worse than that is this thing will happen. What's worse than that? Well, then this thing will happen. Then I'll have headaches forever, or I will get sick, or I'll be in a bad relationship forever. Okay, what's worse than that? What's worse than that? I lose my kids. What's worse than that? And you keep drilling down until you get to the worst possible thing that could happen. It's not pleasant. This is not a pleasant exercise. And if you feel at all uncomfortable doing this, if it starts getting out of control and you become highly emotionally unstable, then don't do this. Don't do this alone, at least. Don't do this. Again, this is just my opinion. This is a show for informational purposes only. This is how I've worked on myself and with some clients over the years. But I take them to the worst case scenario so that when they finally get there, well, this is the worst thing that could happen. This is absolutely the worst thing that could happen. It's worse than death. They might say something like that. Then I might ask, well, what's worse than that? And they may say, well, nothing's worse than that. That's the worst thing that could happen. And where I am inside their psyche is at the deepest layer of their fear or their worry or concern. I'm at the bottom. And what happens when you reach the bottom is there's nowhere else to go but up. And once you've been at the bottom, you know, this is all in your mind, but it feels real because you're asking yourself these questions and you're imagining these things happening. Once you've experienced the worst thing that could happen, everything else seems a little bit easier. Or I should say, less difficult. Everything else, because as you go through the tiers of everything that is worse than the next thing, is worse than the next thing, you're going to go back through those tiers, going back up, reaching the surface so you can breathe again, and realize, well, that stuff isn't so bad anymore now that I know how bad it really could be. So I'm going to leave you with this thought and these questions, and I don't know if you have to listen to this and write things down, or if this is stuff you already knew and this is a waste of time. I hope not. But this is something that I do with myself when it comes to what I might consider unjustified fear inside of me. Why do I fear this? I've been through this before. I've survived before. This feels so unjustified. Why am I experiencing this? I get frustrated with myself. I shouldn't be experiencing this. I teach this stuff. I shouldn't be upset. I shouldn't be triggered. But I am. So I need to explore that. What's underneath that? What's down there? Why do I feel that way? What about that is so bad? How is that a problem? All these questions are so important. It's just language designed to drill into your psyche to get to the root of the issues. And when you use language in this way, it can make a huge difference. It can make a huge difference. So I may not have the perfect answers for this person who wrote. And what I've asked today may not get her to that place, but I do have episodes that might help, especially on self-worth and self-esteem and anxiety. I think that would be a good episode to listen to. I have an episode called When Panic Attacks, the anxiety episode. Yes, there are some double meanings in that title. I did that on purpose because it's fun. Anxiety is not fun, but I think you'll get a lot from that episode. And of course, I have that product, the Safe System, over at quietbegins.com. And I'm not saying this person is experiencing anxiety, but there's a lot that I talk about in any program or product that I've created with anxiety that is all about coping mechanisms. When you have the appropriate coping mechanisms, you can get through the worst of it. My main coping mechanism is a little morbid. It is, well, at least I'm not dead. That's my main coping mechanism. So if something awful comes along, I can say two things. I survived this before, if I went through it before, and at least I'm not dead. That doesn't work for everyone. That's why I didn't say, this is all you have to do. It's just my, or at least one of my coping mechanisms. And it is helpful because it makes me grateful for at least being here and experiencing the world for the short amount of time that I feel that we're here. I think less than 100 years that most people live is too short. And of course, we know people don't even live that long. They don't even live half that long, and some people die way too soon. That's why I look at what we have, and I really am grateful for what we have because so many people don't have it, whether that's life or ailments or disabilities or hunger and homelessness. I mean, there's so much to look at and feel bad about, and there's also so much to look at and feel good about. So there's a balance that needs to happen. You can't just look at everything pessimistically and think that the world is falling apart. You have to see the balance. I mean, this is my opinion, but I believe you have to see the balance. You have to stay balanced. And then you give where you can and you receive when you can. And you try to appreciate things and you try to change things when you need to change things. There's a balance that needs to happen, and that's a personal philosophy of mine. I think when you stay balanced and you see all the good and all the bad and everything in between, you are well-rounded and you will stay well-rounded and not just go down a road of everything is wonderful or everything is terrible. I think it's good to have balance, and I'm just going to leave it at that. Take it or leave it. So thanks so much for tuning in, and I appreciate you. I'm going to come back with my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Talk to you in a second. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank my two sponsors today, Beam Organics. Head over to beamorganics.com/brain and get that white chocolate peppermint cocoa before it's too late, and take advantage of the discount using the promo code BRAIN. I also want to thank BetterHelp. Go to betterhelp.com/brain and get 10% off your first month. And I want to thank the financial backers of the show. These are the patrons of the week. Always love reading these names. Leela, Christy, Adriana, Julia, Anna, Walter, Veronica, Holly, Allison, Maud, Robert, Chelsea, Linda, Deborah, Vanessa, and Samaya. Thank you all so much for contributing and being financial supporters of this show. These are the patrons that I read every week. They're different names every week, and they support the show. So if you find value in this show and you want to give back, head over to moretob.com and you'll have an option to do that. And if you're looking for a show on navigating the difficult relationship, head over to my other podcast, Love and Abuse, over at loveandabuse.com. On that show, I help you pinpoint the behaviors that are causing you to leave every conversation feeling bad. And if you think you're the difficult person in the relationship, if you are hurting someone you love and you want to stop, that's why I created the program Healed Being. Go to healedbeing.com and you can start that program today. First four lessons are free. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And before I get into my final words, I just forgot to read this. Crystal wrote and said, I came across your podcast months ago when I was going through a difficult time in my life, and I'm still going through those hard times, but your podcasts have been such a huge help and so comforting. It's as if you created these podcasts just for me. I did. Just for you. It goes to show that more people than I realize are going through similar things. And if I'm feeling bad on any day, I just think to myself, I need a dose of Paul. Thank you so much for your outstanding podcast. They have made a significant difference in my life. Thank you, Crystal. Thank you so much for writing that. I am sorry you're going through some difficulties. I hope that things are changing for you. I hope that I'm giving you some tools and perhaps some coping mechanisms that will help you through whatever you're going through. And thanks for sharing that. And speaking of coping mechanisms, I have one that I'm going to share that I like to use myself, and that is called role modeling, or at least the way I was taught. It's called role modeling, and that is when you pretend to be someone that can handle your situation. Hear me out. When you do this, you actually develop resources that you may not have had before. For example, I used to walk around, well, sometimes shy. I used to be very shy. I would walk into a store thinking, I don't want to talk to anyone. I don't want anyone to look at me. It wasn't really social anxiety. It was just a shyness. So I thought, oh, I don't like this feeling. I remember one day I was in the parking lot walking toward the department store doors, and I didn't like the feeling I was having. And it was a very shy and almost fearful feeling that people were going to look at me, talk to me. And I decided that I didn't want to feel this way anymore. So I pretended, or at least internalized, what it would be like to be the Terminator. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, he played the Terminator. And the Terminator is an emotionless machine. He doesn't care. He doesn't really think about anything. He's just a machine. I mean, he might compute things, but he's a machine. So a machine isn't going to walk through a department store door wondering if people are going to look at him. It doesn't matter. He's a machine. So I pretended to be the Terminator, and suddenly I felt different. I felt strong, you know, mentally. I didn't feel physically strong, but it's weird. My chest puffed out a little bit, and I started walking with more confidence, started walking more upright, and I walked through the door feeling invincible. I held on to that feeling the whole time. And by the time I was done, I left thinking, wow, that was actually pretty easy. Why didn't I do that before? And if I can do that pretending, why can't I do that all the time? What was preventing me from being this way before? And that might be something I drill down into and figure out, or I'll just pretend again if I ever feel this way. And then pretty soon I won't have to feel this way anymore, because I will have proven over and over again that I don't need to feel this way. There's no reason to feel this way, to feel shy or scared or anything like that. And now I don't. So that went away on its own. No medication, no therapy. And I'm not saying it's going to work for everyone. I'm saying that it's a neat experiment. It's a neat thing to try. And you'll find out if you suddenly develop resources that you didn't have before. The resource for me was the confidence that I needed and the apathy that apparently I needed at that time as well. I didn't care. I'm the Terminator. I'm walking through these doors. I don't care. No matter who looked at me, doesn't matter. No matter who tried to help me on the sales floor, get out of my way. It didn't matter. So I'm letting you know that this exists and it may work for you. So there's a coping mechanism that you don't really hear too much about or at all. Depends on who you listen to or what you read. But give it a shot. See what it's like. And this doesn't have to be like a movie character. This can be anyone. This can be a best friend. It can be a mentor. It can be someone imaginary or real. It's whoever you feel can help you through whatever you're going through. So with that, just keep an open mind. This is how you step into your power. It helps you be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead. so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
92% because of a bike?
Not just bikes. We also make treadmills and rowers.
Oh, let me guess, for elite athletes only, right?
Nope. It doesn't matter if you're an avid exerciser or new to working out. Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try Peloton bikes, tread, or row risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.